I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. In studio with me, Dave Dickey, the Director of Agricultural Programming. Good afternoon to you, Dave.
Good afternoon, everyone. And we look for another exciting Ag Policy Radio segment this afternoon, Todd, this time talking about agricultural policies on the left center.
Indeed it is. It's our weekly discussion of the upcoming Farm Bill 2007 debate. This is the fourth in our series of seven, by the way, of Thursday afternoon call-in programs. You can hear all of those programs on our WILL Ag website. The address is www.will.uiuc.edu. Just click on AM and then Agriculture. Today, Ag Policy from just left of center with the National Farmers Union. Next week, we'll hear from the Farm Bureau, and the week after that, the National Farm Family Coalition. And we'll close out this series by taking up conservation issues with Ralph Grossi at the American Farmland Trust. Today, we're joined by Tom Bias of the National Farmers Union. Tom joined the National Farmers Union in March of 98 as Vice President of Government Relations. In this capacity, he oversees the NFU Washington, D.C. Government Relations Office and advocates the interest of family farmers in Congress and the administration. The National Farmers Union represents about 250,000 family farmers and ranchers. And prior to joining the NFU, Bias served for nearly 5 years as the senior agricultural policy advisor to former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, who was a Democrat out of South Dakota. In addition, Bias worked for Jim Johns out of Indiana. He was a rep there for nearly 5 years as a legislative assistant and a legislative director. And he was also a special agricultural assistant for former U.S. Senator from Indiana, Birch Bayh. A native son to our listener in listening area, Tom, thanks for joining us. Just where did you grow up in Indiana?
Bell Union, Indiana. The closest... It's Putnam County, the west central part of the state. And before coming to Washington, I actually farmed full-time for a living. My two brothers still farm there, and actually I still own the farm.
We'd like to start out by having you discuss and summarize maybe what NFU's positions, and I know they're not all finalized as you've got maybe at least one and two national conventions to go through yet before we really get this debate finalized in Washington. But currently, what is the thinking at the National Farmers Union, 2007 Farm Bill, and the issues that you want to make sure that you hit as a lobbyist in Washington?
Well, I think a lot is going to depend upon when the 2000 Farm Bill is actually written. You know, there's a couple of issues out there right now that could accelerate the process. One, which Congress is addressing this week, is the 2006 budget resolution. We think the cuts are, we're pretty sure we're going to get cuts, although we won't know until later this afternoon, that will force us to make some modifications in the current Farm Bill. I don't think it's going to require any rewriting of the Farm Bill, but the Farm Bill probably will be reopened this year, this summer, under the budget reconciliation process. That's one factor. The second factor is what happens at the WTO Doha round, which the next ministers' conference on that is in December of this year. If they come to a conclusion or a new trade agreement before we write the Farm Bill, obviously it could drastically alter what we can and cannot do. The WTO process does dictate the terms of our domestic Farm Bill process anymore, and so that's an important factor. And when they finish is going to probably dictate when we start again. The Farm Bill is scheduled to go through 2007. We were a big advocate of the last Farm Bill, at least in changing the basis for the safety net from what was called this decoupled approach under the previous Farm Bill of Freedom to Farm, where the producer safety net really was not tied to what they were currently producing, what their current yields were, or what they were currently faced with, some of the challenges. It was a direct decoupled payment. We don't think that's a very good safety net, and for a variety of reasons. It's pretty hard to have a safety net that doesn't match what your current conditions are. Things change, and over time, and certainly can change pretty drastically in farming and ranching. And we understand that. So we did move towards what's called a counter-cyclical approach, meaning the government assistance, the government safety net, would sort of match the economic conditions producers were facing. Prices were commodity prices were high, then the amount of assistance safety net was negligible. And that occurred in the first 3 years of this new farm bill. And in fact, the federal government saved over $15 billion over projected costs of the new farm bill simply because it was countercyclical. Conversely, if the proverbial, you know what, hits the fan, a countercyclical safety net does allow some flexibility for producers to be able to receive a safety net, often to deal with circumstances beyond their control. And that occurred in the late 90s, in 98, 99, 2000, and 2001, because we didn't have a countercyclical safety net. We had to get Congress to pass for four successive years emergency economic assistance. And that's not a good way to go. Number one, you kind of depend upon the political whims of Congress and which way the winds are blowing in order to get the assistance, and it doesn't provide much certainty to producers. So I think going in at 2007, whatever we come out with has to be something that is flexible and addresses the real challenges we face in rural America.
A couple of quick questions for you, and a reminder to our callers that this is a call-in program. If you'd like to participate and ask Tom Bias a question or two, please don't hesitate to pick up your phone and dial one of these two numbers. If you're in the local area code, locally you can dial 217, that's our area code here, 333-9455, the 9455 is WILL. Again, that number locally, 333-9455. Toll free across the listening area, 1-800-222-9455. That's 800-222-WILL. The first question, and just offhand, I characterized the National Farmers Union as we were trying to set up this series of seven as farm bill from just left of the center. Do you object to that?
Well, I don't object. I think I think that's for people to decide terms and labels. We kind of think we're on the side of family farmers and ranchers, whether that's left of center, right of center, or right square in the center. And the reason I say that is, you know, if you go back to the 96 Farm Bill, Farmers Union stood fast against that Farm Bill. We opposed it. We could pretty well tell you what was going to happen, and it did happen. As we go into the new farm bill, and we get our cues directly from the farmers. We're a bottom-up organization. The farmers and ranchers in our organization determine our policy, and so it comes directly from them. Whether you call that left of center, right of center, maybe it's just straight from the heart.
Most organizations like to call it grassroots, I believe.
Tell
me about this just a bit. Of course, the cotton decision by the WTO is looked at as one of the things that will have a massive influence on how current legislation actually may be impacted, certainly the FY06 bill possibly, and the Farm Bill, depending on what the Bush administration might decide to do. And they've said that they will comply completely with the WTO's ruling, and that would be 180 degrees from what the National Farmers Union had asked for the last time around in the Farm Bill, which is, generally speaking, the kind of price support and income programs that farmers are dealing with now, the kind of safety net, direct payments, countercyclical payments, the LDPs that are available to them that might not be available at all. Does Farmers Union look towards getting out of the WTO and more bilateral agreements, which might be the compromise to work with the Bush administration, or is there some other avenue by which you'd like to lobby Congress for your particular viewpoints on the Farm Bill?
Well, number one, we have the tail wagging the dog here, so to speak, with the WTO process. Less than 10% of all agriculture products produced worldwide are traded in international markets. And yet the process dictates what you do and how you produce the remaining 90% of the commodities. You know, in the United States, even oftentimes people use numbers for their benefit, but they often give the rule of thumb that 1 out of every 3 acres of our production is exported in international markets. We would challenge that figure because the export number that is quoted is based on dollars. It's based on what they call a free alongside ship value, which means that includes the processing, the handling, the value added, the transportation, the storage, and the loading of the ship. That's not the farm gate value. The farm gate value that producers receive is considerably less. You're probably talking about 12% of our production is exported. So number one, the export programs, which often are the most competitive and sort of a race to the bottom on prices in order to dump the excess production into export markets, should not be what's dictating our farm policy. In fact, we think the whole WTO so-called free trade agenda of globalization is hurting farmers, and there's no better example than what's occurred, what's likely to occur this year. For the first time since 1959, nearly a half century, we are going to be a net importer of food and agriculture products in this country, and that's a shame. We should be leading the pack, not sort of picking up the crumbs. So again, national sovereignty comes into play. And probably no better example than if you look what's happened with our nation's energy needs. Back in the 70s when the Arab oil embargo was first put into place, we were importing less than a third, probably 27%, I think, of our nation's oil needs. And since then, that's risen to about 70%. Draw that parallel to food. Today, we're importing 15% of all the food that's consumed in the United States. That number continues to grow. Competitive products that are imported in this country, their growth is 3 times that of our export growth. So it's pretty easy to see down the road, things are not getting better, they're getting worse. We don't need to pursue that trend. Tom. So when it comes to the Farm Bill, we don't think that these international agreements should be dictating a nation's sovereignty in the production of food and fiber.
I'll bring you back to the WTO and those international agreements in just a bit, but we do have a caller from Atwood on the line. Good afternoon to you, caller. Do you have a question for Tom Bias?
Yes, I do. I don't know, opinion or a question or
sure.
What you'd call it. But I've been a member of Farm Bureau for 35 years, and I've been a member of your organization for 5 years. And the reason I'm a member of your organization now is because you represent my views more so than the other.
Well, thank you.
And I guess this is a wishful question. I wish there was the only reason I keep the other memberships for insurance purposes so I can keep my insurance. I wish there was a way we could mark on our memberships, both of them, so they can't claim that they represent my views. Well, you know what I mean? They claim they represent me. You claim you represent me. But in reality, only you represent me. I wish there was a place on our memberships where we could check on it, and they say, well, we don't represent him.
Yeah, from a news reporter's side, Tom, and I'll ask you this question, you probably know, and his comment is valid, is that Farm Bureau, and I'm going to assume that National Farmers Union, counts as its membership anybody who is insured. Is that correct from the National Farmers Union as well, or is there a separate category?
Yeah, we do. We have one or two states that do it that way. Most of the others are not. You know, the whole thing with the membership, and the caller's got a valid point, is who represents farmers and ranchers or who represents agriculture. If I used to work on Capitol Hill, and everyone comes in and says, oh, yeah, this is in the best interest of agriculture. And oftentimes they speak with a very broad brush, and we have certain sectors within the agriculture community where there are legitimate differences of opinion and legitimate differences of interest. You take, for example, farmers. The processor who buys the farmer's commodities has a natural need and desire to buy them as cheap as possible in order to do whatever they're going to do with the processing through the food chain. Well, the producer wants the highest price possible. He wants to maximize their profits. And so their interests aren't always the same when it comes to trade policy or it comes to farm policy. Mm-hmm. You have one group that wants cheaper commodities, and someone else, and it sounds like the caller, would much rather have $3 corn than $2 corn.
Let's just check. Caller, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
I've
seen through the colored glasses during Freedom to Farm that the other organization was representing agribusiness instead of the farmer, where the National Farmers Union was actually representing the farmer.
And we try that because we never go to Congress and say we represent all of agriculture. We say we represent family farmers and ranchers and the rural communities in which they live. And there are differences. And oftentimes I think the media tries to say all of agriculture. You see a lot of coalition letters in which it says 300 ag groups support the CAFTA. Well, 298 of them are probably ag corporations that stand to benefit from importing the products. So you kind of got to go beyond the one general mass there. And it's hard. But, you know, the best thing that's happened in the last 10 years here in Washington is the reason we got the Farm Bill. Farm Bureau and Farmers Union got together and led a coalition of 200 and some ag producer organizations and commodity organizations and said, we need some certainty in order to write a Farm Bill, and that's going to take some an increase in budget authority. We took basically the money that was being spent on Freedom to Farm and the money that was being spent on emergency ad hoc assistance, and we took 70% of that and said, we're going to provide certainty for farmers for the next 6 years. And we wrote a Farm Bill. We made it countercyclical. We all stuck together. And that's why we get so upset to see right now that the president proposed and Congress is about to follow suit in risking that by cutting the farm spending programs. We made a conscientious effort. And you know, members of Congress cannot hide when everybody comes in with a unified voice. And everyone says, this is what we need. And that worked very effectively in the 2002 Farm Bill. And I would hope it continues. I don't think anyone's pleased with the budget cuts on agriculture. Again, we're being asked to provide about 10% of the cuts in this budget reconciliation bill, supposedly to pay for deficit reduction, not because ag spending was out of control, but because they gave tax cuts to on numerous occasions to certain segments of our society, and now we're being asked to pay for it. And that stuff comes back to haunt us down the road.
Just about 16 minutes left, Tom. So if we could keep answers to a fairly short issue. And I do want to take one other question up very quickly. What's your policy from the National Farmers Union standpoint on cotton producers? How many cotton producers do you think that you represent at this point?
Well, we have a sizable membership of cotton producers in Oklahoma and Texas and Arkansas. Cotton's an important commodity in this country. You know, the WTO ruling, we wouldn't necessarily agree that we should go forward with that because of a variety of reasons, because if they can come after cotton, they can come after corn programs. The countries that brought the suit against us often like to talk about, you know, this free trade and this violates their free trade. Well, those very countries hide behind what's called special and differential treatment. And that means that they can produce and have different safeguards and barriers against buying our products. So all is not equal. You know, the United States is the most transparent in its protection of farmers, but we're not the only country that does so. Certainly every country does it in some shape, manner, or form, maybe just not a direct cash payment.
Just as a reminder, we're talking to Tom Bias, who is the Vice President of Government Relations of National Farmers Union. Also in studio with us is Dave Dickey. And Dave, you've got some phone numbers and I believe a caller online too.
Indeed. The numbers are 217-333-9455. That's our local number. And then anywhere you can hear my voice, 1-800-222-9455. In just a moment, we'll get to a caller in Champaign. But, Tom, I wanted to ask you, most everybody is believing that the shape of the amber box is going to change. And most folk are believing that perhaps that amber box is going to get smaller. So if we are going to have support programs, we're going to have different ones than we have right now. And I wonder what you think about, from your standpoint, a couple of programs. First, the Conservation Reserve Program. Should it be bigger? Should it be fully funded? And then talk a little bit about the EQIP program.
Well, I think you're right. If the WTO reconfigures the boxes and the amber box, the programs that will be legal, so to speak, for WTO process will be what they call green box programs. And I think a lot of people in agriculture, a lot of groups took a look in the 2002 Farm Bill at a program called the Conservation Security Program, which was the single largest new farm program in the Farm Bill. And that was to look at a whole farm approach, conservation, environmental assistance on working lands, meaning farmlands. There seems to be a good little debate going on with the Conservation Reserve Program, CRP, about the fact that it idles whole farms in some regions and has an impact and provides a barrier to smaller farmers. I mean, CRP's done a tremendous job of slowing soil erosion and taking out of production land that probably should never have been in row crop production from the first place. But it is controversial in some areas, primarily west of where your listeners are, but that'll have to be looked at. You know, the if you bring back in the tremendous acreage in the Conservation Reserve Program, you're also going to have to think of the consequences on price. More production, lower price. It's simple economics that always seems to come back to haunt us. So there is the concern with that as well. I think we're going to have to look down the road at how you provide assistance to real working family farmers and ranchers. We may have to think outside the box. We may have to be creative. We may have to look at different needs in different conditions. And you throw into that mix farm programs, the last two farm bills, we've seen people that traditionally have not been eligible for farm programs, production areas in the Northeast and elsewhere, that suddenly in California, that suddenly now see a need to be included. So the programs not only may take a different shape, but they may be covering a broader territory than the traditional eight major commodities.
Tom, we have a listener on line one from Champaign who's been waiting patiently to speak with you this afternoon. Good afternoon. Thank you for waiting. We appreciate it greatly.
Yes. I'm not a farmer, but I have a passionate interest in agriculture. And I wonder if you could explain to me how on earth, with our currency being in the state it's in right now, this country could have imported more agriculture products than it exported.
that's a great question, because you know the single biggest factor that determines our trade, our exports, is currency. And one of the reasons that the Farmers Union has screamed so loud about our current trade agenda is it does nothing to address currency manipulation. So a country like Brazil, which is probably our biggest competitor for the type of commodities grown in Illinois and Indiana, they can manipulate their currency by devaluing it, which makes their soybeans and corn and beef and pork and other products cheaper on the international market than ours. So it must be addressed. I think if you look at the figures, the projections of exports and imports this year, And with a weak, these are occurring under a weak dollar. Think how bad it would be if the dollar was as strong as it was a few years ago, or if it rebounds. Oftentimes, we're, you know, people are talking about passing the Central America Free Trade Agreement. The benefits are so minimal right now that they would be probably wiped out overnight if the value of the dollar strengthens. But there is this inverse relationship between the strength of the dollar and commodity prices. You can go back all the way to where we went off the gold standard, back that far, and track it. When we have low, traditionally up until now, when we have a low value of the dollar, we have higher commodity prices.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tom, I have a couple questions, and I want to make these kind of quick answers.
Sorry about that. That's
okay. But these are quick answers, and I'm trying to get a feel just exactly where the National Farmers
sure.
Union might stand on certain issues. And I do want to come back to the inclusion of California and some of the Southeast in future programs. I think that's an important part of the program to understand maybe in the future. But as it stands, if you could give me a simple maybe expand, dump, or change altogether in one of those sorts of areas
sure.
on these programs, what would you do with the CSP?
I think it needs to be properly funded and implemented as originally intended by Congress.
WTO?
We need trade negotiators that stand up for our interests, for America's farmers and ranchers, and seek to get a price, not a race to the bottom on prices.
Bilateral trade agreements?
Should be put on hold until we determine what happens at the WTO.
Direct payments?
I think they'll continue in, as part of the mix, not all of the mix, and would certainly oppose it being all of the mix.
LDP?
It should continue.
And then the counter-cyclical payments?
The counter-cyclical and the LDP are so closely intertwined. In this farm bill, the 2002 farm bill, we supported a higher loan rate, which seems to work better than the complication of adding the counter-cyclical.
Hmm.
And we would continue probably to seek that.
And then will you be able to work with Farm Bureau this time around, or will the organizations be split as you head into the debate?
Well,
and I don't want you to be divisive and set it up
Farm
that
Bureau
way.
Farm Bureau and others. We were united in 2001 and 2002 and getting this farm bill passed, and we look forward to working with them.
What will the conservation security program be like after you come out of this next farm bill? I only ask that because I know that was really the only thing that came out of the Bush administration the last time around that was included in the farm bill, and many say that they came late to the game, as the case might have been anyway. But this is one of the programs that was put forward by them and adopted by Congress, though it was really never accepted. It came out of the Bush administration. It was in one of their policy handbooks at one point.
It may have been in one of their policy handbooks. The real driving force behind the CSP was Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa. And the administration is the ones who basically have stymied the program since its passage by, number one, not implementing it in a timely manner, and number two, totally changing it to make it based on watersheds instead of on a farm-by-farm basis. So I don't know how big of supporters they ever were. As a matter of fact, they were sort of missing in action in the whole farm bill discussion. It was written in Congress, and the Department of Agriculture in the White House was pretty much out of the loop on it. I hope they get engaged this time. They certainly need to be, and I think the new secretary is indicated he'd like to be.
I have, I think, both the hard copy and the PDF copy of the policy handbook that shows that CSP, but it was really the only thing in that whole, there was 85 pages, I think, on Conservation Reserve
sure.
in that policy handbook. Dave Dickey, we've got about, 3 minutes left. If somebody wants to call in, they can call what numbers?
217-333-9455, the local number, 1-800-222-9455, anywhere you can hear my voice. Tom, you mentioned that we might have to think creatively in this next farm bill. to get around the amber box. And in 2002, the National Farmers Union had some creative suggestions, including the reserve stocks program equaled about 1 year's of commodity needs for bioenergy production and international food assistance, that to be purchased by the government. Are those the kind of things that we need to do?
We think so. I mean, any business has to balance supply and demand. And obviously, if you try to manage supply before it's produced, you run into some problems, although that would probably be the easiest and cleanest way to do it. But that's not politically acceptable. So what we proposed was helping to get supply and demand in balance by creating some reserves to deal with surplus production after the fact. We have a strategic oil reserve. We think we need a strategic renewable energy reserve. We have 800 million people worldwide going to bed hungry every night. It seems like to me that an international food reserve for humanitarian efforts would make a lot of sense, and it would help get supply and demand into balance. We're in a business, unfortunately, that if you produce one bushel too much, you have cheap prices, and one bushel too few, you have decent prices. And we have to get it into balance somehow.
A caller joining us now from Urbana with a question for Tom Bias or a comment. Good afternoon to you.
Yes, I have a question. In your opinion, what effect does it have on the consolidation of American farms to have the government agricultural price support programs have no restriction on the size of the farm units that receive the support? In other words, does the small farmer have a greater benefit if there is a limit to, say, only units under $1 million gross income receiving government support or some other ceiling that could be established?
Oh, absolutely. I federal farm policy really gets controversial over the payment limit issue, which you're alluding to. We support a decent safety net for family farmers and ranchers, but if you want to go out and farm the whole state of Illinois and Indiana, you ought to do so based on market signals, not based on government assistance. So we would support a cap of some size. That's often debated upon where you draw that line, because producers have been encouraged by everyone to get bigger, bigger, bigger. But, you know, the whole payment limit issue is one where we're addressing the symptom and not the cause. And the cause is low commodity prices, because the marketplace has failed. We as long as we don't balance supply with demand, we're never going to have a decent price. We think that's the better answer to all these problems. Address the cause, not just the symptom. And that's what we're going to be pushing in the 07 bill. It's all about price.
Coming to the end of our...
Without answer, my overseas friends who criticize American producers for, in effect, dumping American agricultural products overseas at below the cost of production, because they say you guys wouldn't exist without the government support programs. So therefore, that allows you to dump.
Well, they have a valid criticism that we overproduce and dump products in the market at a cheaper price. I think everyone has that same legitimate concern. Again, that's going to occur anytime you have surplus production. And unless you balance it in some manner, I mean, you look at, I don't know, a big employer in Illinois, Caterpillar. If they're not selling bulldozers, they don't continue to produce. Somehow they have to manage that and keep it sort of in check. In farming, we don't have the luxury of being able to adjust production month to month or week to week or quarterly to quarterly. We have one opportunity to plant the crop and one opportunity to harvest it, and that's the year's income. So somehow we have to be creative enough that we keep supply and demand in balance so it doesn't depress prices. If we had a decent price out of the marketplace, all these countries would benefit. Not just the United States. It's a race to the bottom everywhere.
Tom, we appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, it's been a great opportunity. And the one thing I would like to make a plea for is anyone who has any good creative ideas, call us. Call your congressmen and senators. You know, oftentimes people in Washington think they have the answers, and it's my experience, it's just the opposite. The real answers lie out there in the countryside.
Thanks much, Tom.
Uh-huh.
Tom Bias is the Vice President of Government Relations at the National Farmers Union. He joined us from his Washington, D.C. office. You're listening to WILL Urbana. It's the top of the hour.